Jen couldn't stop staring at the chick chewing gum in that scene.
Yeah, the one that pointed out.
She's chewing gum and she's like, hey, Don Logoff, like that.
For no reason at all. Why are you chewing gum?
She's a teenage girl. What kind of direction? Super gross.
No, she was 20 years older than everybody else.
Wait, she was like, hey, remember me, chomp chomp?
Yes.
We went steady 20 years ago, chomp chomp. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Like she had a chunk of beef in her mouth.
The curtains close.
Yeah.
And then what directorial cutaway did they use?
I honestly can't remember.
They iris out on her.
Oh, yeah.
The curtains are closed. She's holding the thing and she's like, And then it goes, whoop. And I'm like, no.
Is this satire?
You don't get to do that. This is not the Looney Tunes.
We don't know if this is satire or not.
I don't know.
It's like this weird place where they're trying to be like honest and like thought provoking, but then they do these sort of things and it does not. I can see why it made 70. It was 70K, right?
$70,000, yeah.
$70,000 in the movie theater.
I made more selling my house than this movie made, having cost 20 times the amount of my house initially.
Yeah.
That is so screwed up. That's all. That's just so screwed up. If I give you 70 cents and you give me $1.80, I would want to hit you with all of those pennies.
Would that be like, that almost sounds like the movie in the theaters made 5% of its budget.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That math was really wrong. If I gave you $18 and you gave me 70 cents back,
yeah.
I would rage quit like my whole day.
Yeah.
Maybe not over $18, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. And in the dressing room, Swan and Phoenix are talking and...
Is Beef dead?
But don't dwell on it. Today is your day, and we're going to be focused only on you. We're going to make you a big star. Isn't that what you want? She's like,
she instantly does not give a about Beef, and they kind of imply that she has a soul. But this is the exact moment I was like, oh, she's not here for me.
Here's like even in her auditions, she's like, I just want to sing this music. I'm like, well, that's what she tells Winslow. But at the audition, she's like, I just want to sing, and I'm like. Then why didn't she just walk off the stage? Because, I mean, they're asking some pretty intrusive things.
I'm not going to let you rape me for a job.
Like, seriously, I would not be coming back to this place if there was sexual assault. Like, and that was my first experience with it. I'm not coming back.
But she came back again and again and again because she is like a fame-seeking derogatory word for this kind of behavior. Like, I don't have that word. I wish I did.
Yeah.
But she's not good. She's not a good character. Our only good character is dead now.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get a little sad at the end of all of this being super sad, just think about Beef.
Yeah. They do bring him back up in the ending credits. So, you know, we have that to look forward to.
You know what pepperoni is made out of? Do you know what a subjectively superior Hot Pocket is?
Beef?
Pepperoni.
Oh, pepperoni.
It's the pepperoni Hot Pocket.
Oh, okay.
It's the king of all the Hot Pockets.
Not the broccoli Ham and cheddar
broccoli garbage that can't sing very well but dances around while like herking her weird shoulder dance. Cold in the middle.
And then Swan and Winslow have a meet cute on the roof.
He strokes her throat, remember? He's like, what did you promise me?
Oh, yeah.
You'd give me your voice. And she lets him touch her throat. And you know they're going to touch other things together later. And it's not okay.
Yeah. So Swan is going to take Phoenix to
the Swanage.
And as she's leaving
this is like the fourth time I've heard the word Swanage in this film. And that's when I'm like, off to Swanage for the cringiest bang on earth.
And, oh, my notes say then Swan and Leech are on the roof of the club. And I'm like, nope, it's Phoenix and Winslow are on the roof of the club, though Swan and Winslow is like a couple.
Oh, would you ship that?
No, I think it would be a much better movie if they were like, you know,
okay,
Winslow.
So what happens was she was going out to the car where they're waiting for her. And they start having the longest cigarette in a car ever. Because, like, Philbin doesn't ever finish his cigarette. but the crowd surges at her through a doorway. So she turns around, and then there's a mysterious caped figure beckoning her with a rose that's like flap, 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 flap. Like the most unappealing hot dog offering that you've ever seen. It's just like flap, 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 flap. And then she's like, yeah, no, totally. I'm going to go that way. And she goes up the staircase with this unknown figure.
He grabs her by the arm, and she's just like, ah!
And then she goes. Like, yeah. You got some fight in you. You fought off all those rapists earlier, and you can't fight off mysteriously strong, masked phantom figure? No, whatever.
Yeah. And it's essentially Winslow warning Phoenix about Swan, and this is what he did, and he shows her his disfigurement.
Now, when they were in the hallway and went through the secret door, Winslow could not look at his face in the mirror. Right? He refused to. Swan rips his mask off. He's like, aah! And he falls to the side. And he's like, oh, I got it. Okay. But then he throws the mask off. Mm-hmm. He whips his mask off in front of her. And he's like, look what he did. The thing he won't subject himself to, he's subjecting her to. And he's like, and you're the last person who will ever see my face, which is not true because the end of the movie's coming.
Mm-hmm. And well, he also says that you're the only one who's going to sing my music.
Yes. And she's just like, I just wanted the crowd. And
yeah, she doesn't care about the price that she might have to pay for her fame.
Or literally her co-star who died.
Right.
Does not care.
Yeah.
She's going to go have sex with that creepy little man. She's going to get her dollars. And she's going to like totally snub her nose at the person who presented her with this opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
She goes downstairs to the car.
Tells them that the guy who killed...
Freak. She says that freak who killed Beef is on the roof.
Right.
And Swan says, send the cops.
Yeah.
And then she gets in the car and he's just like, don't let it ruin your night.
Yeah.
This is all about you. It's like a freaking yellow snow cone of awful.
Then he turns to the driver and he says, to the Swanage.
Yes, he does.
And so, like, the next scene that we see is Phoenix and Swan in, like, that circle bed of Swans. And
oh wait, I gotta say, I vote, hold on, okay, wait, okay, so my notes are like, on the roof the phantom goes something like, no one but you, all for you, and then he's like, if you f it up I will destroy you. Like, he has no chill between the two. It's either all for her or none for her, but he like can't. To the Swanage. Ugh.
And then sex with a glass ceiling. Winslow is watching them and Swan knows it.
So back when we had the orgy scene, this is a skylight above the circular bed. I will say that they did change the sheets. It's no longer an orange sheet. It's now a black sheet. So now the circular bed looks like a record.
Yeah.
And it's got the dead bird logo on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they are laying on the dead bird picture. And I don't know about your seductive skills, but I don't think that'll work. Let me lay down this picture of a dead animal and crawl on it and then beckon you to me. Sorry. Who's doing it there, Lydia?
I don't know. I mean, it's the logo, so maybe, I mean, obviously she doesn't really care too much about these sort of things, so it will definitely freak you out, but you would not stick around this long.
I wouldn't, no.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously you're a much better person than Phoenix.
It doesn't take much to be better than Phoenix.
Yeah. Then Winslow is all, like, angsty, and he tries to kill, and he kills himself, he just...
She strokes his nipple.
Yeah.
We see full-on man nipple. Then they start having the weakest makeout I've ever seen in my whole life.
Yeah.
And then, to make it worse, Swan reaches his hand over mid-makeout, pushes a button on a remote control that activates a camera taking a picture of Winslow outside the window, and then you see him on a side shot looking at the picture of him getting watched while he's getting make out, and then he smiles.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, and Phoenix seems completely oblivious to all of this.
Yeah. So then Winslow screams, and this is what's driving me crazy about this. Remember when he screamed earlier?
Yeah.
And it woke the entire building? Didn't look up. She didn't look up. And they're telling me it's because of the thunder crack, I'm pretty sure. Because it was a thunder crack,
yeah.
Him screams, stabs himself in his own heart. Because of course you would, you emo kid from 1997. Ugh. Mm. And then he's just like, ah! And she's just like, let's keep making out. And, and then Swan's like, I gotta go check on a thing. And gets up from the bed and goes to the roof.
Here's the thing. We don't actually see that. We don't know how that makeout session ends.
No, he sits up.
He sits up.
She's like, really into it. And it's impossible because this is not a very, I mean, he's a fine actor. But in terms of my thinking of someone as attractive, this little mole of a man, I don't mind he's short. Short ain't bad. I don't mind his bad haircut or his like overly starched clothes. or his like tight little face or anything. It's just that it's all together. It doesn't do it for me. That's fine. But like, he never looks into it because his objective is elsewhere. She's selling it. She's like, yeah, I'm going to totally have sex with this guy. And then he's just like, a noise on the roof that I know what it is. I've got to go. And he gets up and he leaves. And I just don't like that. I'm so sorry.
But it's okay. Like I said, I could watch you react to this film all day.
Oh, Winslow, killing yourself on the roof. At this point in my notes, I was like, he killed himself on the roof? This is the end of the movie?
No. Because Swan takes the knife out and informs Winslow that he actually can't die because he's under contract. And that if Swan were to ever die, then that wound would open up and they would terminate together. And Winslow is so enraged that he goes ahead and tries to kill Swan.
He leans in and he's like, I'm under contract too.
I want you to know, applauders, as Naomi said the end of that line, her eyes went together. She went full cross-eyed. It was great.
I mean, like, you had to expect it, but I was kind of hoping he would be more the devil than a tool of the devil.
And then we see a large crowd in front of the paradise, and Winslow sneaks in for some reason.
Well, he's got to get to the video room.
Yeah, and he's looking for Swan. Swan, Phoenix, and Philbin are in the limo talking about the end of the show.
They're doing coke.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm like, okay, I don't hold your substances against you, but lady, you're about to perform.
Yeah, so there's going to be a show. There's going to be a wedding at the end of it. Philbin's going to be the pastor, preacher, the one who's performing the ceremony.
Yes.
And Swan then goes, he's like trying to make his way from the limo into
the... Oh, and he's
going to
be wearing a mask because of his anonymity thing.
Oh, yeah. And so Swan is making his way into the club from the limo. And like, he gets stopped by like some musicians who are like, hey, listen to us, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then there's this lady who shows up.
She's taller and older than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, remember me, Swan? Swan, you remember me?
We went steady like 20 years ago. And then she pulls out this picture and all these like ladies around her are just sort of like,
What were you pointing out to me about that one scene? Because you're like, watch this. And I was like,
one of the actresses is just like, oh, wow, that's 20 years ago. He doesn't look like he aged today. And I'm like, it's like that guy from Trolls 2, that meme of the, oh, my God. I don't know. That's what the feeling.
Jen couldn't stop staring at the chick chewing gum in that scene.
Yeah, the one that pointed out.
She's chewing gum when she's like, hey, don't look like that.
For no reason at all. Why are you chewing gum?
She's a teenage girl.
What kind of
direction?
No, she was 20 years older than everybody else.
Wait, she was like, hey, remember me? Chomp chomp.
Yes.
We went steady 20 years ago. Chomp chomp. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Like she had a chunk of beef in her mouth.
That would have been far better.
This movie has enraged everyone.
Well, the freaking podcast is called Shocked and Applaud.
Most of the time we have been applauding things, so I guess this is our shocker. Oh, sorry.
So you might say that our previous movies have been in the pink and this one's in the stink. Like, is that what you're trying to tell me? Okay, so they're doing coke and thing. He makes his way to the building. Lady's like, oh, no, that's all we ever see of that lady.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she has no other purpose other than to say, he's 20 years old. It must have something to do with his contract, right? And so then we get to the video room. And it's the only place that you can watch these videos of Swans. But Winslow has found in this room, there's another room that's a closet that has all of these videos that he's been recording over presumably the last 20 plus years. He grabs one that says contracts on it in this cool little fold out paper thing.
Yeah.
Like, pulls out this reel to reel tape and he takes it over to the video machine and he plays the thing that says contract on it. And then it shows a same age as now Swan sitting in a bathtub being an absolute douchebag.
He's like really high, smoking out of a hookah. He's saying to the video, I can't live past this time because I don't want to get old, so I'm going to kill myself. And then the camera goes to like Winslow's face and underneath his mask, I swear his mouth just, you know, does that straight line, like that emoji where it's the face, but it's just the straight line emoji. Yeah.
I cannot abide freaking I want to die because I'm not pretty enough. I I won't stay pretty forever. I don't get that. I don't understand that. It might be my inferiority complex. I always have thought this was a tragic train wreck. And that anybody who thought I was cute for any reason had a seriously strong mental defect. It's probably true, but at any point have I thought I need to die before this gets worse.
Mm-hmm. I'm in the same boat as you.
Okay.
I'm just not in a fully committed relationship with someone that I've known for like 20 years.
That's true. But I do love your face.
Yeah.
And we've been friends for 20 plus years.
Yeah. And I know plenty of people who are like, you know, lady, you're just fine because your personality is fine. You don't have to look good. This is what we learned in like,
oh, man.
You know, ABC's After School Special 101.
I will tell you, as somebody who had dramatic physical change happen, like, you get fed this line that, like, nobody's judging you based on, like, for me, it was size and this face, I suppose. But I always kind of assumed the best. I was like, okay, you tell me you like my personality, that's the best part of me. That's not true. But so then I lose, like, 130 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of these people were like, you look so amazing, right? Nothing has changed about, like, I wear the same amount of makeup you see on me now, which is none. And the effort I've put into my hair, which is none. And I tried to put on a cute outfit today, but I've gotten stared at twice in a bad way about it. But everybody who came out of the woodworks that was like, oh, you're not the fat fuck I always thought you were. It's amazing how much bias there is and how much we're lied to about it. So I get that it exists, right? But I've always been in such a negative headspace about it that the idea of being like, I'm young and perfect now. I want to preserve this.
Yeah, I would be lying if I said I was never self-conscious about my weight. I have come to the conclusion, being almost 40, that if that was a huge deal to me as an individual, I would have gotten that taken care of a long time ago. That would be a high priority. It's not. Getting through my day and getting home without like hurting anybody or raging at anybody or, you know, crashing my car into the road.
Yes.
That is a high point in my life.
I like that about you. Those are all things I appreciate about you.
Right. So like me being like, yeah, so what if I'm overweight and society doesn't think that I'm good? I would like to go ahead and borrow something from our last podcast. Doggone.
I feel like I should bastardize that Chris O'Dowd line from that where it's just like, I am a painter. Are you good? I don't know. I am an attractive human being. Do you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, so the mirror talks to Swan. It's like, he's like, oh, you're the devil? And he's like, I go by many names. Mm-hmm. I can keep you as beautiful as you are now. You'll never age another day. This videotape will age, but you have to watch it every day so you know how beautiful and attractive you are. And that's when we go full our third comprehensive work, Dorian Gray. Phantom of the Opera, The Picture of Dorian Gray, Frankenstein, Cask of Ontillado, and The Cabinet of Dr.
Caligari. Yeah.
So we've gone full Dorian Gray, but bricked into the dungeon. What, the dungeon? The recording studio was the Dr. Caligari one.
I thought that was
the cast of...
Yeah. The YouTuber that I told you about, Overly Sarcastic Productions. Yeah, they break down like three short stories by Edgar Allan Poe, and that was one of them.
Oh.
And just do really good things, and I really like their stuff. So
that's awesome.
Shout out.
Okay. Shout out.
Okay. Where were we again?
Okay. The devil is talking him through the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, stay beautiful forever. Hands him a paper contract in the bathtub. Swan holds up the razor he was going to use to cut himself. He wanted to be perfect, but he's going to cut himself. Whatever. He's like, I was going to kill myself with this. And now I'm using it to sign a contract. He pricks his finger, signs the thing. And then this video cuts to the next contract. It cuts to, so it says the contract on this tape shows this whole interaction for Swan and how he got contracted. Then it cuts to Winslow signing his contract, and he watches that. It's not the full scene, but... And then it cuts again to Phoenix signing a contract.
Right. And something that we should bring up, when Swan is signing his first contract, one of the clauses or one of the addendums is he has to watch this video every day. If this video were to ever die, then he would get destroyed, he would die.
Yeah.
So that's important.
Your face is this video is your face sort of deal.
Yeah.
Then Winslow's contract binds him to Swan's life. Mm-hmm. But we never get to see the details of
Phoenix's
contract.
But that isn't important because it's mostly used as a plot device to go ahead and make Winslow get all angry and start destroying things because it's Winslow's attempt to save Phoenix. We also see at the very end of this video a conversation that's going on between Swan and Philbin about how Phoenix is going to be dying and that's going to make this so entertaining.
An assassination on live TV.
It's so amazing. And that is another aspect of Winslow having to save Phoenix.
Bad editing. Mm-hmm. You're just setting yourself up for failure if you put all your incriminating stuff on one tape.
Yeah.
Okay. So we see Winslow start running around, right? But mm-hmm. this is where I noticed that he's wearing a velour cape. Have you noticed this? It's all crushed velvet looking. It's pretty bad. I was like, you look like a couch, sir, in a very fancy brothel.
Right. He does like pick up this big mechanical thing that for a while there I thought was a projector, but maybe it's like the video screen he's looking in.
It's the video player. He picks up the machine, the whole thing. It looks like a mini fridge. He picks it up, he chucks it in the contract room where it sparks and everything goes on fire mm-hmm. because that's how it do. But then, like, we have the longest running scene I've seen in forever. Like, I will tell you.
Oh my goodness. Like, so infuriating. It's like it cuts to like this screen of all of these different monitors that are up uh-huh. and you see all these different like images that are up there. And one of them is this ongoing performance of these dancers dancing horribly, by the way.
Oh my gosh. Are we going to talk about those ladies?
Well, I mean, that's the next scene, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I've written the word murk down. So, yep.
And again, it's like this long scene that ultimately is probably in there just for runtime.
Well, what we're trying to do is to make a cohesive coming together of these one, two, three, four different aspects. You got the show going on. You've got the Phantom trying to get down to the show. You've got what the hell Swan is up to, and then Phoenix. And you're trying to get those things all in the same place so that you can have your climax. And it's bad because they're all in different parts of the building. So we assume there's like 3 to 5 stories of this building, right? But even if he's at the top, on the top floor in the personal apartments that are not the same thing as the Swanage. I don't know about you, but if I run down a flight of stairs, like gravity's in your favor, you're going to get there pretty fast. Even if it took you a minute per flight, which it wouldn't.
Right.
Like you'd still get from point A to point B really fast. And okay, guys, the contract's burned, which if you have not caught up on this, applauders, it means that freaking Dorian Gray Swanson's face is burnt now, but he's still going through with the plan of coming up to the floor to get married on the stage.
Like he doesn't even know that his face has changed.
He doesn't know? I don't know, but she's all stoned and high off mm-hmm. her ass, and she's dancing in with the weird herky jerky shoulder things. Like you pointed out, she only got one move, and it's mm-hmm. the herky jerky freaking shawl shrug thing.
Right. And there's all of these dancers who are like in bikinis, very scantily clad bikinis with like headdresses in the shape of a bird.
They're dressed as birds. They have giant beaks on their heads. They've got these lace wings that are actually pretty on point. I like those things. But then they have this bikini bottom that's covered in feathers. Except here's the thing, applauders, they're ostrich feathers. Guess what, applauders? Black ostrich feathers, when clumped together on a bikini bottom, look like a murk. A murk, or merkin, I think it is a prosthetic pubic hair wig. It's a thing that exists. Sex workers used to wear them back in medieval times because they'd shave off their hair because of lice. And then they'd wear a murk so that they look like a grown person because body hair on a grown adult should be sexy. Stupid culture. All of those actresses, those dancers, they hated them. They thought it looked like pubic hair. It does look like pubic hair.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
It's probably one of the best costumes in the entire film. And it's also the worst thing I've ever seen. It's both things. I'm there for it, but I want it gone.
Yeah, I'm going to point out the fact that the dancing is just so bad. It's like literally like, you know, like move your foot behind you and then move it up front and then twirl and then do that step again.
Yeah, somebody actually choreographed that specific scene.
They did not do a good job.
What it looks like to me is... And after, okay, so you've got all these different peoples on stages. There's guys with like hoop earrings and girls dressed like birds. And then there's a priest in the middle of a lotus flower in front of a giant swan thing, even though it's like Dead Records Productions. And then people run around. The crowd is going crazy. They freaking love this. They're eating it up like it was a pepperoni hot pocket. They are freaking the freak out. okay, so all of this is supposed to be chaotic energy. The concert's going amazing. But what it feels like from the outside at this point, with like 5 more minutes to go of the plot, guys, and only 4 more parts of this podcast to listen to, it looks like somebody filmed a cast party from a high school productions after show, and everybody's just trying to be edgy.
It's a perfect description.
Was that Cindy over there with her goth phase, with her other goth friend? Okay, that's fine. Oh, is Stephen over there with his hoop gauged earrings, and he's just like smirking as he makes his friend with other gauged earrings makes a pervert joke?
Going with the Faust theme of deals with the devil, which I think at the end of that, like, Faust actually gets dragged to hell.
Yeah, yeah.
This is very much like, oh, look at the hedonists there, you know?
Oh.
Yeah, this is like hell. They're in hell, I guess. Or yeah, it's like their attempt.
It's very much like the Garden of Earthly Delights, sort of like.
Yeah.
Like, you deserve hell kind of escape. Yeah.
Because of the fact that you like sex and drug use and drinking and smoking, you know, this is hell. It's like, well, I don't know, I'm being all crazy because I'm, you know, debaucherous.
And the best one of us is dead already. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Beef!
So Winslow makes his way. So we also like see, like, again, we get that split screen of like the dancers going on stage. And then you see like the assassin getting his gun out and getting that ready. And, you know, eventually Phoenix comes out doing her weird like herky jerky dance.
Yes.
And trying to get the shawl back on her shoulders, but all the using
really
her shoulders.
It does look like that, guys. Okay, so in this multi-tiered theater, which I think is called the Majestic, where they filmed it, right? There are terraces. And the top, now, everybody wants to be in this concert. It's the biggest deal that ever happened, right? The top terrace doesn't have anybody in it. And so there's a projection window, and the assassin can stick his sniper rifle through it. And then Winslow sees this. And he runs. Did you see? He ran across the seats.
Yes.
He could have safely run down an aisle or like between the chairs where you walk to get through a theater. But he's like jumping armrest to armrest, risking life and limb in order to bap the gun like an angry kitten. Boo.
That would have been such a better movie. It just like cuts to a kitten like bapping something.
Wow.
And like they're got this whole marriage ceremony going on, and like when Winslow grabs the gun, it like it he baps it, and it ends up hitting Philbin because he's trying to hit Phoenix.
Right. And there something about her contract which wasn't very clear was that the death do us part mm-hmm. was really important. Like that's when her contract is in effect, or like whatever, like if one of them dies, I guess she's out of the contract or something like that. And so Philbin's like, do you? And she's like, oh, I do. Because she thinks it's all a lie. And then he gets shot, which is fine. I don't mind.
Right. And but all of this dancing's still going on and they're still being debaucherous. And Phoenix goes down. She looks at Philbin. And then we see Winslow swing through and he grabs the mask off of Swan.
It's a perfect swing. He goes diagonally across the stage with one swoop, peels the mask off of Swan, who's then like, and like falls to the ground with his white gloves covering his face. And then she's like, she gets jostled away from worrying about Philbin, and she goes to Swan, whose hands, like, she pulls away from his face. She's like, what's wrong? And he's just like, what does he say?
He says something specific. I can't remember though.
I don't remember either. It doesn't really matter because you're staring at his face that looks like a peach that's been rubbed on the concrete.
Jen, what did you say when we were watching it?
He looks like he's got bacon face.
Yeah. It's like, what? You don't like bacon?
So give me your bacon kisses.
Ew. His face looks, I mean, he's been burnt because his tape's been burnt, right? Mm-hmm. And so he's getting destroyed the same way that
his contract's good.
Yeah. He's bound to his contract. He's dying the same way. But we also learned in the stabbing himself over somebody else getting laid scene. I'm sorry that we didn't mention it then, but like Winslow stabbed himself on the roof. The stabbing didn't take because he was bound to Swan. Swan said that if he died, all of the wounds that he'd sustained would come back the second he died. So he's going down because of the tape and getting stabbed. But then, I'm so sorry, Winslow grabs one of the headdresses off of a chick, right? Yeah. Goes over and stabs Swan with this beak, which I'm sure is a deep metaphor, but we are in hour 87 of this. And then because he stabs him, all of his wounds open up.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's just chaos.
And like, did you see that one of the other guys in the audience is like mimicking Winslow? Like Winslow takes the headdress and he's like going, and this guy is like probably, you know, on drugs. He's like, oh yeah, headdress of a bird. Yeah.
He's and then got a red shirt, a red Hawaiian shirt on and a mullet.
And he, and when Winslow stabs him, he's just like, oh yeah, I'm going to stab this guy too. Like,
I'm part of the art now, guys. Woohoo. That's what it felt like.
Again, you did the eye cross and it's so good. Because they like, and even the audience like lifts up Swan and
yeah, they've taken his body off. That doesn't really matter. Like now that his wounds have shown back up, Winslow pulls his mask off, even though she was going to be the last one to see his face. She's like, ah, because she's been knocked away from Swan, and he starts crawling across the stage trying to get to her, being like, Phoenix, because now she matters, now that she's not messing up his art or whatever.
Right.
And he's just doing the sad crawl with his one big eye out there, the one that got popped out of his skull. And then,
yeah. And like Phoenix at first is aghast and then he dies. And then she like finds it in her heart to, you know, cradle his dead body.
Now she's all sad about it.
Yeah.
So you pointed out somebody was standing behind him wearing his mask. Like they thought, oh, he lost his mask. I guess I'll put on that guy's mask and walk around behind his dying self because mm-hmm. that's art. But the thing that gets me is red shirt mullet guy. He takes off his shirt. And as our last formal scene ends, it pans up to show the crowd and the chaos and the sad girl weeping over the thing. Hawaiian shirt takes off his shirt and throws it at the ceiling. And that's it. Yeah. That's end scene. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, I feel you, mullet. I feel you.
And then we get the ending credits and it's The Hell of It by Paul Williams. And it's like a curtain call. And this is where we get to see Beef again.
Okay. Can I just?
Yes.
The end scene has all this swelling music and it's all like chaos noises and it's like all visually overwhelming and I am just overstimulated and I can't process all of it at this point. And then it's like, okay, and scene. And I'm like, oh, I made it. Then it's just like, it cuts to a Beach Bums song or something, right? And all of a sudden it's like...
Yeah. It's this really upbeat, poppy song and it's supposed to be like in-depth and meaningful in some ways.
Is it? Because I don't know where the satire line is.
Yeah. Well, right. Because that's been one of our biggest criticisms of this whole thing. Like, I'm going to pull up some lyrics. So we get, I mean, if Google wants to, you know, cooperate.
Oh, okay.
Here we go.
I called it Weird Ballad Over Juicy Fruit Montage.
Good for nothing, bad in bed. Nobody likes you and you're better off dead. Goodbye, 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 goodbye. Born defeated, died in vain, super destruction, you were hooked on pain, and though your music lingers on, all of us are glad you're gone. It's upbeat, it's really poppy.
Yeah.
But it's still like, it's like the tone that the movie was trying to get that they ultimately didn't get.
No. Mm-hmm. It is not. But hey, we sit through all of the people's names who we'll probably not list, but then towards the end of it, Garrett Graham. Mm-hmm. Get one more look at his beautiful face.
It's wonderful.
I bet he still has glitter on him to this day. And I'm there for it.
Yeah. I would just watch a movie where it was just about him.
Yes.
Yeah. Just that character.
Yeah. Okay. So did it feel like Phantom of the Opera? Did it feel like The Portrait of Dorian Gray? Did it feel like The Cask of The Doctor Killed a Furnip Jacket? I need to go to my Sean facts.
The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. I haven't seen that, though.
The Cask of Amontillado. Eldo and the Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, but they also make reference to Frankenstein. So there's a bunch of like classic suspense horror stuff.
Yeah.
Satire doesn't do well with suspense. Not really.
Well, wasn't there like, there really wasn't a lot of suspense in Hot Fuzz, but there was satire in there. There was satire galore.
Yeah, they didn't.
But they leaned more on the satire than they did the suspense because it's not about like, who is this person? Because that was such a nothing plot point in Hot Fuzz.
Yeah.
For me, this movie has a huge tone problem where it's like it's trying to be like somewhat campy, but also trying to take itself seriously. And I just don't think it pulls it off.
Here's what I think it is. I think that this is so early in this bizarre type of comedy that there is no precedent for it. Did I just say that twice? It's all blurring together now. There's no precedent for this type of humor. And so because it has nothing to derive its own tone from, it tries to set one and it fails. But it could be that it's so bizarre that there was nothing for it to fall to or to lean on in terms of like expressing itself. It's like, and I'm sure these came out near the same time. Did you ever read Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test?
No.
Okay. It is about some day glow, neon, LSD tripping hippies who just kind of go for it. And there's this theme, largely influenced by drug use in the late 60s, early 70s, that very much was like, let's see where we can go with this. And so they'd take some drugs, they'd write down those ideas, and then when they sobered up the next day, they would do those ideas. So like, oh, we should get a bus and paint flowers on it, man, and then go do our experimental music over in whatever place and like really freak them out, man, right? So it felt like this film had a touch of, what if it was the Phantom of the Opera, but it was about music that was modern, and then like the girl was like on drugs, and like it felt like an early work. Does that make sense?
It definitely had this disjointed feel to it. Like it was trying to be so many different things that it ultimately didn't know how to be anything. Didn't know how to be its own thing.
It's certainly something.
Okay, so watching you throughout this entire recording, it makes me wonder, is this like your Tusk?
I have not felt as encountered with a film since like Tusk.
Yeah. And I don't think it hit me on that emotional level. I mean, I've watched this 3 times. I've relatively enjoyed myself every time, despite like the disjoint, despite the fact that there's like, you know, this tone problem, or, you know, the fact that it just doesn't seem to know, like they're trying to tell me a message. It's like when you talk to a 2-year-old who is talking at you very intently about like some emotion that they very obviously feel, but you don't have any idea what they're saying.
Have you heard that audio of that kid who's just like, do you ever, when you think about the thing that you ever, did you ever dream the thing that was the thing that you thought that you were thinking were, you remember that audio?
No, but I have had those conversations with children.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
I am totally on board.
It's not hard to do.
Yeah.
Kids are a mess.
Yeah. And I mean, that's to be expected. But and if this is one of Brian De Palma's earlier works, then, you know, it would make sense that things are just a little bit messy.
Yeah. You got to make a mess, you know, and make something really great. And if you're going to come up with a method, you're going to make a meth of that, too. I feel like I should. You guys both had like Faust jokes or a Dorian Gray joke. And I don't got nothing. I wanted it to be like a Frank and Beans joke because like, but then nothing. I got nothing.
That's okay.
I feel like a Frankenstein joke, but about Frank and Beans.
That's okay. I kept laughing at your Hot Pocket reference. Like at one point, like.
Is she talking about Hot Pockets again? They're a metaphor.
They are.
For nearly everything.
It landed so well. So well. When I listen back on this podcast, I am going to be like taking a minute just to crack up, and it will be like with such intense laughter, I will not be able to breathe and I will be enjoying myself.
I will have fully forgotten about that by the time this comes out, and that'll be good.
So,
Hot Pocket.
Not sponsored. Not unless they want to. This is
they have to discontinue the ham, cheddar, beef. No, not beef. Don't cancel beef. The ham, cheddar, broccoli one. It was a B word. Shut up.
Yeah. So, and now we're coming to the very end of our podcast, and this is where we talk about our shocked moments and our applaud moments. Yeah. So, Naomi, what was your shocked moment?
Partly I want to say that we've managed to find yet another problematic persons of color film.
I kind of wonder what this says about me as like a film goer.
But you never saw it. It's not like you, it was recommended to you by some well-known people from the internet.
I wouldn't even say they recommended. They just like, hey, this is a movie. And I was like, that looks weird. We do weird movies.
Yeah. But we lean so hard on that. And there are so many better conversations being had about those kinds of things. So I guess I'm going to go with the casual sexual assault angle. Because I was talking to a family member the other day. And I was like, oh, I have a problem with such and such artist because they've been accused of rape. And I don't play around with jokes like that because I was molested. And I mean, like, I just don't mess with that. Don't take a vulnerable person and take advantage of them and then are cool about it just because they make content you like. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
So in that same vein, this family member was just like, you what? And I'm like, we don't talk about it because we don't talk about it. So the fact that I am hyper aware of this and I'm forced to be aware of this and you get to use it as like a joke or like something that you don't have to pay attention to. Yeah, right. that's a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
That's something you get. But I think about sometimes.
Yeah.
So when it showed up in this film, I was like,
yeah,
how many times?
Several.
She could have been a sexy lamp.
Mm-hmm.
A sexy lamp that man would have raped. So,
yeah.
Okay. That's it. That's, I don't even, That's it for me for shocked. I'm sorry, it's a little too dark, but like, ugh, disgusting. No, but maybe yours is funnier. Maybe, no. Maybe you're
funny. My shocked moment is like they're trying to say something. It probably goes back to my analogy of like someone pointing to a turd in the pool. And like that's all they're doing. They're just saying, hey, this is a thing. Like okay, so the comment against people who talk about like we live in a society, so sometimes criticism about that phrase is specifically about like constantly bringing up the fact that we live in a society and like there are things that are wrong with that society. And that's ultimately where that phrase is like kind of going. Like there are things that are wrong in our society. We should not be happy with the status quo. Mm-hmm. And we need to take active measures to go ahead and combat that. Point it out, because you don't learn from your mistakes unless someone points it out. But you need there's this other side of that where you have to like action comes with acknowledgement, but it's like this movie is just talking, acknowledging that there's a problem,
but not making any effort to change it at all.
Right.
Yes. Unless you make motion, you haven't learned anything.
Right.
Not really.
Well, and it's like when people talk about joke or like when anyone's like saying, oh, I did this joke.
I love that those are air quote noise.
Yeah. That joke was supposed to be that joke about like sexual assault. That was that wasn't done crass. That was specifically about a joke. And it's, you know, that when people use that as an excuse because their joke didn't land. But it's like they're coming up with reasons as to why they made a joke that ultimately didn't land, that was hurtful towards anybody who has experienced that. Mm-hmm. And they're not, but it's ultimately they're not saying anything about that that is in a let's take action against that sort of a manner.
Yes, with a sympathetic ear to the victim of that joke.
Right.
Yep. Because here's the thing. I probably, like, now that I've educated myself more, and there are probably sex worker jokes that I would think are funny, but they are informed and probably made by a person who has that profession.
Right.
Right? I don't have to necessarily want to do that profession, but I think that keeping in mind that people are human all the time, but when you're talking about something that can trigger somebody, keeping the person who's most directly affected by that in the forefront, that's paramount. That's why, like, we should be lending our ear to Black content creators and persons of it's not even affluence. It's just like the person who's had that experience deserves the floor, and you should give it to them. And if you're like, well, I'm gonna go ahead and had somebody say the N-word to me, and they and I was like, oh yeah, that I don't use that word. It's really racist. Mm-hmm. They happen to have the same pigment as me.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, you see, I'm using it in this context. And I'm like, regardless of context, it doesn't belong to you.
Mm-hmm.
And they went to another family member later on and was like, I think I made her mad. I said it just as casually as I'm talking to you now. Like, I was like, this is not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't bash them about it. But I promise you, they're never going to use that word around me again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just because if you have the privilege of being on the outside of that and seeing it and not saying something, I'm not a saint about it, but if I notice it, I gotta do something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm sorry, just kind of took over your bad point.
No, it's totally okay. So, hey, Jen, did you have a...
When it said directed by Brian De Palma.
Burn.
Like, I can accept just an overall bad movie, right? But I had forgotten somewhere along the lines, I didn't look up anything before we watched the movie. And so when it actually came up with Brian De Palma, that was very shocking to me. I knew Paul Williams was in it because that was in the preview. But I mean,
do you not like Brian De Palma?
Well, no, I admire some of his work. I thought the original Mission Impossible was kind of groundbreaking. I mean, there's always a spoof of somebody falling from a ceiling on a cable. And he does shock film really well, like Carrie. You know, Carrie is not a very large jump from this movie.
Yeah, it was like a year, maybe two afterwards.
So this is so different. He's trying to find his own voice in as a director at this point. And so, I mean, it's really surprising.
Yeah, I don't know anything from Brian De Palma just off the top of my head, though, you know, Carrie, I've seen Carrie.
He managed a successful Stephen King film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you'd like to make the reference to that, go to our Pet Cemetery episode.
And was it a successful Stephen King film that Stephen King was happy with?
I don't know if he was happy with it. Okay. I remember I read it like back in the day, and it has that kind of disjointed narration.
Okay.
That's really hard to communicate to film. And he managed to make Carrie work. So mm-hmm. There's got to be genius in there somewhere.
All right.
And The Untouchables was pretty well done. I was nominated, if not won, some awards. Oh, by the way, this movie has been nominated for Academy and
Golden. An Academy Award for Best Original Soundtrack.
Didn't win it.
No, it could not have won it.
No. Okay, so when you said that it was nominated for an award, I was like, a Razzie?
Nope. Our president has been awarded a Razzie. But this movie has not been awarded much at anything.
We're not a political podcast.
Nope. I'm just stating facts. That's not me passing judgment. I'd love to get a Razzie. Just famous enough to get that microphone. And I'd be like, thanks, guys.
Stick a knife on the end of it.
I want a knife for phone.
So what we need to do is we need to make a really bad movie.
Uh-huh.
Really bad.
Yep.
And we'll get a Razzie for it. We have to like figure out what gets Razzies.
You have to try to mean it and then fail at it. You can't try to fail at it and then succeed at it. So we have to make a sincere film. I'll write the romantic dialogue because I'm going to be real good at that. And then you could write the scientifically accurate horror scenes. And Jen, you can do prosthetics. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be called Beefenstein. I'm super down for Beefenstein. Okay.
Okay.
We have to get Garrett Graham in on this.
Cameo. All right. Applauds. What did you love about this movie?
I appreciate something really weird. And there were problematic parts. But there was some fantastic stuff. Because it's not necessarily for me all the time about positive or negative emotion. It's about intensity of emotion, which is kind of the whole point of Shocked and Applauded. So every time I was like, no, 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 no. And every time I was like, eee! I loved that. I got both extremes. I mean, I got some Garrett. Mm-hmm. I got Psycho mixed in with some Garrett. Nice. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Don't change a thing. That's the right level of spicy. I like it. Right? And then you turn around and then, like, dollar store Martha Stewart's on a circular bed making eyeballs at the ceiling because the only thing she has left to feel is the despair of someone who never actually hooked up with or had more than a 2-second conversation with a girl at all, like, dying through the skylight, literally. Like, I can't hate that either. I was like, yeah, that's really depressing. I would be really sad about that. Is he voyeuring a voyeur? Is that a double negative? Is it no longer voyeuring if you know that you're being watched by somebody else?
How about you? It was essentially one scene. It was the musical number Someone Super Like You, where they have this whole like nice stage moment where they're going into the audience and cutting up body parts from dummies.
The knifrophone part?
The knifrophone part.
Yes.
Yeah. That whole moment just was like, just appealed to me on so many levels. I mean, it talks about production. It talks about, like, you know, the fact that this is a stage play and everything. And it's just all these different aspects of it that I absolutely love. So
that's gorgeous. I like their pre-kiss era kiss makeup.
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous. Fully approve.
Jen?
Oh, there's just a level of camp that I don't get exposed to enough, probably. And this seems to be, even as horrible as it did in the box office, it seems to be a root or a source material for
everything,
a whole bunch of things in the 70s and even into the 80s. If we're talking Phantom of the Opera, there's inspiration in this source that you can possibly find in other places. I don't know if The Who would have been able to do Tommy without this movie. Who knows if Rocky really...
Rocky Horror?
Yeah, if Rocky Horror Picture Show had gotten a fan base without this doing almost a test with the people first. So maybe the movie isn't as great as its influence.
That is accurate.
We don't know if we would have gotten Daft Punk.
That's true.
Yeah, they love it.
Paul Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Paul freaking Williams.
We've only just begun.
Oh, no, Jen. We've only just finished. I love it when there's like one in the can. I'm like, yeah, we got more podcast content, more torture for Jen to sift through. It's true. Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm going to get a text from Lydia in the middle of the night one night. It's going to be like, ha, bucket.
I've already seen Sean's, at least an initial preview of what Sean's cover art is going to be for this, and it looks pretty.
It looks great.
Pretty good.
Sean. Yeah. Sean Facts. Sean, your artwork is amazing. Your notes are impeccable. We appreciate you. You're here with us in spirit, not in a dead sort of way, but in a, we always think of you as in the room. Mm-hmm. And also, thank you for social distancing. Please continue to do that, guys, as bans get lifted. That's a public service announcement brought to you by Shock and Applaud. Hey, right. Hey, we'll catch you guys next time. Keep it beautiful for the next 20 years and then burn your tape.
This is the end of our review of 1974's Phantom of the Paradise, a plotter. Thanks for sticking around for the conclusion of this peculiar musical horror comedy. Podcast dance cart still not quite full? Why not check out Bedknobs and Broomflicks, who just covered Disney's Sleeping Beauty? Or for more Nicolas Cage energy, check out Cage's Kiss, who just reviewed the 2016 film The Trust. Hey, this is your audio engineer and third act swan singer, Jen. If you haven't heard, we're celebrating 2,000 all-time downloads this month. And this is partly due to our recent podcasting friendships made on social media. You can follow us on Twitter using @ShockedApplaud for retweets of other film, comedy, and fandom podcasts. Or let us know your shocked and applaudable moments of our episodes. We'd also really like to thank those of you who consistently listen each week as our applauders. You're the reason we've kept going over the last 2 years. We'll be taking a week off before the next episode, so we'd also recommend subscribing to us in your favorite podcast app, so you'll be first to know when our newest film review drops on August 4th. It's one of Naomi's all-time favorite movies, so you won't want to miss it. From Shocked at Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.
Yay!
I didn't mean to imply that you should kill yourself.